Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Benji. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are on season 2, episode 2 of The Crown, called A Company of Men.
Yep.
Isn't that great?
A Company of Men. Yep, absolutely. And so this is the second in what I've already described as being the season that's more or less about Philip. And we start to see like a lot more about Philip in this episode, which is really pretty cool. But we do have our usual caveats and disclaimers and things like that, which include there's likely to be cursing.
Definitely in this episode.
There's going to be cursing in this episode for sure. And there is also likely to be spoilers for the other seasons of The Crown. And we are also drinking. What you drinking?
I'm having that Welch's Sparkling Sangria non-alcoholic drink.
Yeah, it's a big pour. That's pretty awesome.
It's
tasty. I know, I agree with you, but it's tasty.
It is tasty.
It really is. I'm having, because there is a Christmas element and it is Christmas time here while we're recording, I'm having a poinsettia cocktail, which, if you haven't had it, is basically sparkling wine and cranberry juice. And so that I think is very festive looking, and it's very festive tasting. So if you want to give that a shot, please do. But this episode does not start out at Christmas time. It ends at Christmas time. It starts out, and I didn't have any drinks to go with this. That's part of the reason really that didn't happen. With Philip on a boat with a bunch of British naval officers, and I think it's in the Congo, as far as I can tell. Somewhere, I believe, in Africa.
Yeah. Around that area.
Yeah.
They're working their way down to Australia.
Right. So they work through a number of the British colonies, because it's almost like the Commonwealth tour.
A mini Commonwealth tour, but right, in more like remote islands.
Right. And we get some description of it, because there's a letter
that Mike is sending.
Right, Mike, who is...
Not
Phillips
to his wife, oh no, to the Thursday Club.
Right, to the Thursday British Men's Club.
He takes the time to write a letter.
Oh, it's a lengthy letter.
A very lengthy, in-depth letter to his club, but can't seem to pick up the phone for his daughter's birthday.
Mike's a dick.
He's awful.
He's horrible. He is just a horrible human being. And clearly should not be in the institution of marriage or in the institution of a family or the institution of, well, anything. And hopefully will not much longer be in the institution of the royal household.
Or any institution whatsoever. Anyway.
Right. The way he's describing it, he describes a lot of the places they're going, and they go through the Seychelles and how lovely they are. But he's also describing how Philip, you know, being a man of action, he's not just like going to meetings and stuff like that. He's like, we're having our own mini Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
We beat the locals in most of these places. We've been playing various games with them. But in New Guinea, we met our match, because apparently people are getting their faces beaten in by...
Yeah. Except for in cricket. But also, Mike says, in New Guinea, it turns out there's no such thing as infidelity.
Yeah, and he kind of makes reference to the infidelity is just not really a thing that they have been concerned about on this entire tour.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and of course, you know, it is a major issue for the rest of the world. But he says that there's no such thing as infidelity in New Guinea, but the contents going forward need to remain a secret. Because
what happens on tour stays on tour.
And what happens on his like
this isn't Vegas, Mike.
Apparently, in his mind, it is. But that most of the men on this tour are married.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to make sure that people.
And he says they would hate me if I told you. It's right. Like you are telling everybody.
But basically, he makes it sound like they are sampling women in every port.
Oh. Like a platter? Like,
it's
Jesus.
Like human trafficking. It's really
horrible.
Disturbing. It's really disturbing. And then, of course, you know, that whole good old boy type mentality, which again was very accepted, I guess, in that day and age, is repulsive.
Mm-hmm.
It is very disturbing. Meanwhile, we are having demonstrations in Trafalgar Square about the war in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a speaker, and I can't figure out exactly who he is, but he talks about how The PM is being shameful and dishonest about this misadventure. It's the first time we actually heard the term misadventure.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't have that in the last episode that titled it.
I know, I was hearing this, I'm like, they should have had that in the last episode. Wait a minute.
I like the way the last episode ends, but at the same time, if you wanted to get the title in there, you should have waited.
Yeah, yeah.
Or shouldn't have waited.
Right, so then we've got, Dickie Mountbatten. And I say that because, again, he clearly has ambition.
Yeah.
And so he is meeting with the Queen Mother and Elizabeth, and he tells them about, like, basically things are going to shit with the way the government is going right now, particularly with the Prime Minister, that they had to withdraw militarily from Egypt, which is really, really bad. I mean, if you get started, you better finish, and they didn't. And then they've had basically financial ruin.
Yeah.
Because the Sterling, British pound, yeah.
Sterling has gone to shit, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's all really bad. They're going to be looking at fuel rations going into winter. And he's very upset, Dickie is, about their reputation internationally.
Yeah.
And, of course, Philip is out there.
Yeah.
Having to deal with it, and it's something you brought up in the last episode, but Philip, in the middle of Dickie being there,
Phil calls,
which it's, you get the impression that he didn't call much, but he calls,
and Elizabeth's really excited.
Yeah, and she picks up the phone, and he can't hear her, because the connection's
away. She can hear him, but he can't hear her, which is so symbolic.
Of the poor communication. Yes. But again,
it was a little heavy-handed for me. I don't know.
Yeah, it went on a bit too long. But again, when you're really trying, you're going to try a little bit longer. But he was calling from New Guinea, apparently, according to the person who answered the phone, the servant who answered the phone.
Yeah.
And she was very excited to talk to him, but couldn't. And you could tell the way this is portrayed, he is very upset that he can't talk to her either.
Yeah, you can tell he's feeling a little bit homesick, just a little bit.
Right. And so they cut to Philip, and he's giving a speech to the men on the poop deck of the Britannia.
Okay.
And he talks about, hey, this is our job at this point. We've got to restore the British reputation internationally. And I'm really proud of y'all for being such good sports. So grateful to be back at sea. The Navy is such a big part of my life, and you know, how we do things is really very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got to go to open the Olympics, and you know, I'll be back. You guys keep sailing, and I'll see you when you pick me up in Australia.
And so on their way to Australia, Mike and
they go by plane.
Yes, they're talking about how he has a really busy schedule in Australia, but they're going to find time for fun and all that stuff. And honestly, Mike sounded like he was trying to strip it down to, like, the bare essentials. Like, he's doing the bare minimum of the tour in Australia. Because he's just like, oh, I tried to trim everywhere that I could. And it's just like, well, that's kind of understandable but not for, like, the reasons that you are, like, that are good.
Well, what do you think his reasons were?
So that they could find time to fuck people.
Well, that's certainly Mike's motivation, isn't it?
Well, that he will have time to fuck people.
Right.
We don't know what Philip's
So we can go partying. I mean, it is disturbing.
He gives him this really rote speech of...
That you can just memorize it and you can move as quickly as possible to...
Which is what they do for Elizabeth, but at least they try to make it sound like, oh, this is a great speech that will reach everybody.
Right, and so you hear Philip giving the speech over a montage of events that he goes to, like cattle drives and you know, other things on the tour, looking at industrial complexes and the kinds of things that royalists tend to have to do.
And when they're like driving in one of the deserts, you see someone holding the camera. I believe it's the reporter that they talk to later, Helen King.
The blonde woman.
Mm-hmm.
She's very pretty.
And she wants to meet with Philip for an interview, and he says that he'll make an exception for her.
Right. He tells Mike, oh, I think she's a friend. Have you been seeing the way she looks at me, man? You know, and it is such a guy ego thing. And in case you're wondering, men do think this way.
Mom, I'm not stupid.
Okay, just yeah, it's like, hey, she's in.
But also, him being so far away from his family and his obligations, I think he's starting to let that slip more.
Yeah. I mean, the way they leave that double entendre there is, like, it could be just that he likes the idea of getting feminine attention as opposed to, hey, we're going to have sex,
mm-hmm.
which, and you, Mike, and this is, like, one of those few occasions where you hear Mike being the voice of reason, right? Like, Mike's like, are you sure? I thought we weren't going to do interviews. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure this is a good idea. And Philip's like, no. Have you seen the way she looks at me? She's a friend. it's like, okay. But he opens, Elizabeth is watching as Philip opens the Olympics on TV, and it's clear she's quite proud of him.
Mm-hmm.
And the Queen Mother comes over, and she's like, oh, wasn't this a great idea of mine to send mm-hmm. him away? I told you, he needs time and space to shine, and blah, blah, blah.
And Elizabeth literally says, yes, thank you, Mummy. And right. then she just, like, pats her on the back, and it's just like, what do you want?
Right, and Elizabeth, you see that conflict again. It's this great Claire Foy facial of, I'm not sure how I feel about it now. Now that you say that, it's like,
Great, thank you, Mother.
Thank you, Mother, that's lovely. We then see that Mike's wife
mm-hmm.
goes to a divorce lawyer,
mm-hmm.
and she says, look, he's abandoned me, he's been awful, blah, blah, blah.
And he's like, that's not legal grounds for divorce. You want one of the big three.
Right, and the big three are that you need adultery,
mm-hmm.
unreasonable behavior, or insanity.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm sure there's been adultery.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, we need to have evidence. And she's like, that's going to be hard to come by because he's
the private Duke's secretary
to the Duke of Edinburgh. And the guy's like,
oh.
Okay. Because Mike has this generic last name, Mike Parker. So it's
yeah.
like, eh. And now that I'm thinking about it, it's like, is he related to the Parker Bowles people? I wonder.
I don't know.
I don't know either. But England's a small country.
Sure. But also, what I find interesting is that Mike's wife brings the kids to the appointment, but she doesn't, like, bring them into the office, but they're waiting in the lobby.
Those poor children. But again, you know, back in the day, that's what you...
Yeah, like, what are you
going
to do?
You didn't have, like, a babysitter or whatever.
Well, some of them did.
But they also were incredibly well-behaved, and I think that expectation of children being able to sit quietly in an anteroom while you get stuff done has changed significantly.
For the most part.
So yeah, that is not common anymore.
Sorry for the unwanted ASMR of the ice that's in my cup.
That's okay. We also have the ASMR of Yang, who is on the table. Purring at this point.
Uh-huh.
We're getting his backside a little bit.
I think he was trying to get to my scone.
Yeah, he probably was trying to get to your scone.
Mm-hmm.
That's...
He's not going to get to it, though.
No. No.
Anyway,
they're good scones. Go
they on. Are good. They are.
Yeah, okay. Glad
but
you like
Yang's not allowed to have one.
No, he is not. But she's sure there's adultery, and he's like, you're going to have to get hard evidence. You know, and then she gets the advice, this is so patronizing, of...
Stick it out.
Maybe things go right. It might just be a bad patch.
What do you mean, bad patch? It's like this for the whole marriage.
Right. I mean, and again, you know, there is... I can see, and I think that they're juxtaposing this a bit with Elizabeth's situation. Like,
Absolutely.
They're trying to make it out to, like, it's the same, which we don't
see.
It's not. And we don't see it as being the same. For, you know, like, we don't see that...
At least Philip called.
Well, but here's the other thing. We don't see that Philip is, in fact, acting on the...
He definitely doesn't at least abandon the kids.
Right, but we don't see him, like... But you know, Mike makes it clear in his letters, I've been screwing people, right?
Yeah.
Whereas you don't hear that about Philip or from Philip.
Right.
And you don't see that.
And it doesn't rub it in anyone's face either.
Right, right.
If he is doing it at all.
Right, I mean, even in the whole of the last episode, you know, when they would show, like, these women coming up, whatever, it's always, like, him going, oh, no, you know, kind of thing.
No, you mean this episode?
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. So, you know, there's not a very obvious... thing where Philip's actually acting on these bad behaviors.
So, except for inviting the reporter, which is a weird move, but it's not necessarily... It leaves it ambiguous.
She may learn. So we're going to get to that in just a second. So,
but she, well, once the solicitor is like, oh yeah, maybe you should stick it out, she's like, I'll come back with evidence.
Yeah, bye.
I don't blame her.
Yeah, yeah, no, she's done. And she's finally just, like, had it. So then we see that Eden is, like, basically taking a handful of painkillers. And it's not enough.
He wants stronger meds. The doctor's like, there are no stronger meds.
Yeah, and he's you're on the biggest painkillers we've got. Yeah.
And he's apparently, and he like tells Elizabeth that he is concerned, he needs rest. But Elizabeth is concerned about him leaving given the state of the country. But he is at the edge of human endurance.
Oh yeah, he's like, I'm going to be away for a couple of weeks. My doctor says I need rest.
And she's like,
you'll just be around the corner, right?
And he's like, no, I'm going to Jamaica.
She's like, I'm sorry.
The doctor told me to go to somewhere tropical, to enjoy the tropical sunshine. And then she's like, I wonder what you'd prescribe for us.
Like, we all have to suck it up, loser.
And also, this is a problem you created, Eden. You should be here to stick it out.
Yeah, you're running away from this problem.
Now everyone else has to pick up your fucking slack, dumbass.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate him.
So bad.
Such a wimp. Obviously, okay. Health issues, yeah, you can't really do too much about that. But leaving the country, literally leaving the country to its own devices and leaving it physically because... like, after you've done this whole thing, is so irresponsible.
It is.
And it's what does that say about you as a leader?
Yeah, no,
Nothing
good. And you know what? Somebody else stuck it out until where he was, like, falling apart.
For better or worse.
Right, for better or worse, but at least...
Mostly worse.
I don't think we know the whole story, based on what we're saying.
Of course
we're
never going to know the whole story.
But the reality is that, you know, Winston, if the country needed him, would be there.
Yeah, for better or worse.
Right, anyway, but if he created a problem, he'd want to stick it out.
Yeah, no,
he's done.
I will give it to Winston, he would. Anyway.
Anyway, so we've got then this lovely blonde waitress walking down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets
confronted. And we've seen her in, like, the background of some shots and such from the Thursday Club.
I hadn't noticed her before.
Well, at the beginning of this episode, you follow her in the Thursday Club.
Right, so she is confronted by Mike's wife. And Mike's wife's like, look, you're his type. I'm pretty sure that you know who Mike is. I'm pretty sure you know what he's been doing here and that he's been doing things with some of the women here. And I need to know what you know because I need to get out of this marriage, basically. And the waitress is like, no. But the wife's like, let me give you my card.
Uh-huh.
And the waitress goes to work, and she's like, you see her working, and mm-hmm. and she's like getting slaps on the ass, and these guys are just being
awful.
Just awful.
Who'd want to
misogynistic. I mean, it's just miserable, but I'm sure you're getting paid, right?
Yeah, but still.
No. It's a miserable working environment.
If you can be a waitress somewhere that isn't going to get you slaps on the ass
every
single
time. Of course,
time.
You know, yeah, right. One would hope that those places existed then. Mm-hmm. But then we have a very interesting sequence between Martin, the secretary, mm-hmm. and Michael, the mm-hmm. secretary, where Martin shows up and Michael's office like, we got a situation.
I heard from my wife. I heard from this guy who heard from this, like, beekeeper who heard from this guy who heard from this girl who heard from his wife who plays tennis with her. And then,
solicitor who, that, this
is like this person's cousin. And
that, and Michael's kind of like, all right, that's half of England. Mm-hmm. So everybody in that chain already knows
that Mike's wife is asking about
divorce and asking based on adultery, infidelity. Mm-hmm. And that Mike and Prince Philip, or Duke of Edinburgh, are founding members of this club where stuff has been murmured to happen.
I also love when he, like, it's like, where he's a member, it's like, he's a founder. And it's like, oh!
Yeah, and I, you know, we had not heard that until now. It's like, oh, ouch. Mm-hmm. Ouch, 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 ouch. And so Michael is just like, okay, we gotta deal with something. We're going to have to deal with this. And he's like, look, you need to keep an eye on it. You mm-hmm. need to keep a close eye on this and let me know if you hear anything else. Meanwhile, Mike, the loser secretary, other secretary, not Elizabeth's secretary.
The worst.
Brings in the lovely reporter to meet with Philip. And they sit next to each other on the couch. And it's like, oh, God. I guess the excuse is that's where her recording equipment is, but it's bleh. And she wants to ask Philip about the Suez Canal. And she's like, I can't talk about the Suez Canal. I mean, she basically wants to do all the things that a royal cannot
But she's
discuss.
Also, like, talking about how, like, oh, but surely you have an opinion. So, like, of course I have opinions, but I can't voice them.
Right. So Philip says all the right things. And he's like, I'm going to be keeping my thoughts to myself on that. And she's like, well, since you have such progressive views. And then she touches him on the leg. I'm like, this girl is, like, she is the reason why this whole weird dynamic exists between men and women in that period, I think. You've got, like, women using it and men using it, for sure. And all of it is wrong.
Yeah.
So she touches
talks about
the leg.
And then she talks about childhood trauma.
But again, the example that she gives, the very first example of his progress, he's like, I have progressive views. She's like, well, you wanted to televise the wedding and blah, or the coronation. And he's like,
that was just common sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's just this, one of those things we have concerns about. Oh, is that based on, and this is where I did not catch it, but it becomes, by the fifth season, something that pisses me off. They have, like, four things they can talk about with Philip.
Only four.
And this is the entire
Let's count them on my hand.
Go.
Flying. Nazi sisters. Father who left with his mistress. And mother is insane.
Exactly. These are the things that we know about Philip, so we're going to beat them into the ground.
Oh, and Navy.
All right, and the Navy. But we're going to beat those fucking things into the ground. And, of course, in this early stage, you're kind of like, ooh, that's interesting. I didn't know any of that. Because, of course, we're Americans. We don't know any of that shit.
Okay.
So, it's kind of like, why
I didn't know any of that shit, but I'm sure there are some Americans who did.
Well, right, but for the most part,
it's pretty...
It is for the audience that is going to be watching this, fairly new information.
Yeah.
And certainly information that you haven't given much thought to.
An interesting part of this is he stands up and pours himself a drink, and he glances up at the picture of Elizabeth that hangs over the drinks. I actually love the placement
it's
of
Britannia.
That.
It's Britannia.
No, but it's her placement of the placement of her portrait right in front, like right at the wall where the drinks are, is really funny to me.
Always watching.
He drinks, and he takes a drink, and he looks up at the picture. He's like, oh, God. I'm doing this for you.
She knows.
Well, no, but not only that, but I think he was also kind of looking at her for guidance in that, because she's usually able to navigate these kinds of things pretty well, and controlling her image, and that's something he does struggle with, and it's something that he even has criticized her for being able to control her image so much to the point where she seems very stoic just in her life, but at least she has control. Right. He's looking for control right now, and he can't find it, so he looks to Elizabeth.
Well, and you know what? It works.
It works somewhat.
This reporter keeps asking him. She asks him about it had to have been very traumatic, your mother's illness. And she asks him this, and you see the flashback. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then, again, Matt Smith does a great job with, like, you see the flashback to little Philip and his mom's being driven away. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, I just got on with it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what you do, is you just get on with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's like, and she starts asking about other things in his personal past, and he's like, if we're to remain friends, you really need to move on. Mm-hmm. And she won't.
Mm-mm.
And at that point, he also demands that she call him sir.
Mm-hmm.
Because he realized, oh, she thinks that she's going to play games with me.
I'm sorry, I'm just making noises. I'm eating.
It's okay. But I mean, that's her thing. It's like, and then she brings up the Nazi sisters, and you can see, like, he's about to actually hurt her. And then she tries to do all the complimentary things that had gotten her in the door to begin with.
Yeah. There's this one section that's really interesting where she's like, well, what about your schooling? And he's like, I went to a boarding school in Britain. How is that anything interesting? That's how everybody else is, really.
Yeah.
Well, most everybody else of that station, I suppose. But then he went to Germany for a year, then went back to the UK. He went to Germany because his sister, his favorite sister, which everyone calls the favorite sister, including the reporter. I'm like, how do you know it's the favorite sister? But
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Was married to a close personal friend of Hitler's. And Then he's like, but then I went back a year later. It's like, come on.
Yeah, I was there like, what, 14 months or something. It's like, it's ridiculous.
Like, come on. Moving on, really.
Moving on, but he's just like, and then she's like, oh, well, you here you are. We're all so interested in you. You're such a striking, handsome man. People are interested because you're walking next to the most recognizable and known woman in the world and blah, blah, blah. And we just want to know about you. And she's like, I'm just a normal guy. I'm just a guy.
And she's like, no, you're not.
And right. And she's like, well, you were effectively orphaned. Your sister died in a plane crash. And you see these flashbacks of young Philip. And the actor that plays young Philip's really very good.
Yeah, he's
also
great.
And
there's a whole episode
and,
for him.
Right. And Philip just says, enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I'm trying to reconstruct it from a person who used whatever information was available to create this episode.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a recorded interview somewhere because she recorded it, and it is probably exactly this of the Duke of Edinburgh going,
Stop. Please stop.
I'm a normal person. Stop. Go away. You need to get out of
and
here.
And even if this isn't a regular interview, they got the information and they're hounding it.
Well, right, but I think some of the information is obviously public information.
No, absolutely. I mean,
But they are putting their spin on it, and he's like, I'm not having anything to do with it. And so, again, it makes me hearken back to what I had read online about, you know, Prince Philip. When The Crown came out, saying to Elizabeth, this will just piss you off, just stop watching it.
It'll piss everybody off, but, not just Elizabeth.
Well, right, but again, I'm sure it pissed him off. It's like, you're being characterized as this womanizing, god-awful person with these horrible relatives.
I think it also, yeah, that's kind of how the media usually would portray him, at least at that time, especially when, like, the rumors came about and they wanted to know more damaging stuff about him.
So they would make it up.
Exactly. And so I can only imagine how he's like, well, we know that their sources don't know the whole story regardless. So I know the whole story. I don't want to see what they think I am.
Right. And so what she says is, well, I think that the public has the right to know about their leaders, especially ones that can't be thrown out with free and fair elections. I mean, you can hear her voice rising and it's kind of like,
whatever.
Oh, boy. Yeah, okay. Then Philip leaves and tells Mike, do not ever let my vanity get the better of being like this again.
And
okay. And kind of like, yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever, Philip.
So then we
Yeah, Mike's the right guy to tell. Like, really?
Yeah, really.
Mike's gonna help.
So then there are some rough seas.
Yeah.
As they head toward Antarctica. And in that storm, some of Philip's pictures that he has with him. This is interesting because he has other pictures with him.
Yeah, he has pictures of his parents.
And himself.
And himself.
Young
One thing I wish they kind of added here, because they had a lot of stuff they could have done with this storm sequence.
Yes.
And things that he felt he should save from being, like, smashed or something.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wish that they took the time for him, when he gets into his cabin, to make sure that the Elizabeth portrait stayed upright or did something like that. Something a little symbolic that shows that he still really cares and that he doesn't want to take her down with him.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
I think that would have been a really nice touch.
Yeah.
But
they leave it ambiguous.
At least he doesn't look at the fucking ballerina picture.
All right. And we never see it again. So,
never. Well, so. Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe it's evidence at one point.
Oh, wait, later. Yeah, never mind.
It is later.
So the waitress, meanwhile back in England, the waitress calls Mike's wife and talks to her, goes to her solicitor's office and talks and says, look, we would meet in various locations. I didn't know he had a wife. I didn't know he had a family. He didn't mention any of that. But I will never give evidence in court. And, you know, still there's no hard evidence. And the wife's kind of like, why are you here? What was the point of actually showing up? So you could give color to my nightmares, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So now I know who it was that he was doing things with. Great, thanks.
One of many. But at the same time, I can understand the idea of, like, it would ruin my reputation. You could just leave the job.
Yeah.
Leave the job, testify in court, help.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, she does help later, but honestly, this could have been easily avoided because she does not, especially after seeing how she's treated, she doesn't seem happy there.
No.
and she doesn't like being treated the way she's treated. So, no,
but she wants a good reference to get another job, I assume.
Fair, I guess. But she could just quit now, and then whatever.
Well, anyway, so we've got Secretary Michael, good Secretary Michael, asking Martin, look, how are we going to... And I find this interesting, because, like, Martin comes to him again, and they're like, look, we got the situation, and there are rumors. We need to get ahead of them. And he asks Martin, so what do you think we should do? And I like that. I like that collaborativeness, see, which we didn't see with Tommy.
No, that's what I said earlier when Martin was... When Michael got the job instead of Martin. It's like, Martin's not gone. He's. No. It's not like it's, like... Where it's two positions, it's two up, like people going up for one position. Right. He's still going to have a position as a private secretary, but he's going to be like the junior secretary. Whereas Michael, and they can collaborate, and right. And Martin helps out with like Margaret and stuff. And so it's not like he's gone. Right. But I do like seeing them collaborate.
Right, I do too, and I like...
And Martin's wife knows everyone, so...
Right, apparently, and of course that is a big value to Martin. So then we see that Britannia is going to be going to Antarctica without reporters. Mm-hmm. And they're like, let's have a beard-growing competition, which is like, okay, this is clearly guy stuff, but it was not offensive. It was kind of like, hey, you know, we get to do some stuff without people. We get them to see pictures of Philip's parents, and Mike comes in and tells Philip, hey, they want you to make a Christmas speech.
With the emphasis on the sanctity of marriage, very subtle.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And we know that Michael is up to this, but it was like...
Behind it.
Yeah, sure. It was behind it all, because they know about the rumors about... the other Mike and all that stuff, so it makes sense why they would do that. But I think I love that he's like, well, the emphasis on the sanctity of marriage.
Well, right,
and Philip's just kind of like
Christian themes, family, and the sanctity of marriage.
And he's just like, okay.
Right, and so Michael then goes to Elizabeth and is like, hey, we got to do this. We're going to be doing this other speech with Philip.
It will be first, and then yours will
right,
be second.
Right, he's going to have to get up at dark 30, blah, 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 and she's kind of like, good.
Sure, whatever. She agrees to it.
Right, but then she's like, why is Philip making a speech? Because normally it's just me. What's up with that? And then she's like, oh, we want to reassure people. Okay, got it. Good, fine. Good idea.
Which, I mean, regardless of the reputation stuff and the rumors, it makes sense because he's going to be away from the family during Christmas, and you want to reassure everybody, oh, it's fine that he's away during Christmas. Everybody's fine. The kids don't care.
Right. And Elizabeth asks Michael something. I find this really...
Sad.
Yeah, but it's interesting. She asks if he's ever been separated from his
wife. The longest he's been separated from his wife.
And I think he says 3 weeks. And he's like...
They didn't like it. His wife especially.
Right,
like
his
it.
Wife's like, she believes that married people should belong together.
No, this is what he says. Little good comes from a couple being apart, that a husband and wife belong together.
Yeah, and Elizabeth's like,
Well, to be fair, she wasn't the one who came up with the other part of the tour.
Well, she wasn't the one who came up with the tour at all. It was
her
mother.
No, she gave him the Olympics and stuff like that, but she didn't call for a 5-month tour.
Well, all this was her mother and fucking Tommy Lassell's doing. So, you know,
well,
whatever.
Well, Philip added on with the extra legs of the
right,
tour.
Right, but it's not like that added significant time. This tour was already fairly lengthy to begin with. So... The ship is going along, and
time has passed.
Time has passed, and they have beards.
I wrote down Philip has a beard, and it's a look.
Yeah, I will say this: Matt Smith is not really the bearded guy. Although
he looks fine, but I think that he looks better with the clean shave.
Right, and it's interesting too. Like, he has long hair on House of the Dragon, and that long hair is okay. It's not great, but it's okay.
Whatever.
Whatever. So
they bring in an injured soldier on a board, and they're
debating. Well, we don't know if he's a soldier. He's just an injured person.
I said sailor. Sorry, I meant sailor.
Yeah.
I wrote down sailor.
Yeah, no, this is somebody who was stranded on a boat. They don't know who he is. There's no one else alive who has survived. It's like a boat capsized.
Philip says it doesn't matter who he is or where he's from. He's the captain of a ship. That's all that matters.
He's
one
of
us.
Yeah.
And Philip wants to get the man back home, but But that would throw the ship off schedule. The flag officer says no, but Philip says yes. And he eventually convinces him to help the guy get home. That makes sense. Another letter.
Right. I want to back up. This is one of those points where I got distracted by attention to detail. So Philip's uniform at this point, he's having this conversation with the flag officer. And the rank for these naval officers is shown on their epaulets, on their uniform. And he has these gorgeous, jeweled crowns on his epaulets that were, like, distracting because no one has anything, like, royal anywhere. And
no,
so
they're not.
Well, right, but it's like, damn, that's... But the fact that they bothered... But he also is pulling rank at this point, too. Mm-hmm. He's like, look, I'm the admiral of the fleet. I don't give a fuck who you are. He's like, no, the ship is only run by one person. It's the flag officer. You should know that from your naval training. He's like... I was actually on a boat in the war. Where were you? Oh, yeah, on the beach. You were a landlubber. You weren't actually out doing it. I know who runs the show. I run the show. This is what we're doing.
Yeah, it's my wife runs the show, so I run the show.
Yeah, but, you know, I am Admiral of the Fleet. Shut the fuck up,
buddy. He eventually had to pull rank with his wife. Not with his wife, but, like, using his wife as...
Yeah, no,
the rank. He tried with the original rank, but that didn't work out, so he was like, fine, I'll pull out the big guns, fine, right. You're asking for it.
Yeah, if this is how you want to go. So they have to, they have this discussion about returning the man to his people on an island, and it is a lovely place. It's Tonga, I guess. It's one of
it's near Tonga.
Near Tonga. It's an island that's like in the middle of nowhere. It's very, it's beautiful.
Yeah, they get them safely home,
but
all that stuff.
There are people there, and they describe the people as being beautiful and blah, blah, blah. And they're simple pleasures and simple means. And it is very obvious that Mike is sleeping around with people there. And he says that all of the men left each a great deal in love. And so this is the letter that gets to the Thursday Club, and the waitress gets hold of it.
Mm-hmm. I like that she at least helps.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, it's like, it's clear, and she gives it to the wife.
And it's
clear, like, it's a 5-month stag night. That's the way they describe it. It's like, mm-hmm. That's what this is. So we get, and it's Christmas. So mm-hmm. We've got Elizabeth arriving, and I
think it's Balmoral.
It doesn't look like Balmoral. I think it might be either Windsor. Yeah, I think it might be Windsor.
I think it was Windsor
because
initially.
It's much lighter colors.
No, the thing is, I saw it, and I was thinking, okay, well, there wasn't an establishing shot, so I was like, okay, well, the rooms look like Balmoral, but everything else looks like Windsor, and I was like, maybe it's Windsor? I don't know.
I think
Palace. Right, they usually go to Balmoral, though.
And Christmas, right?
And the living
Balmoral
room.
Is usually paneled on the inside.
I know.
I think it might be Windsor.
It doesn't matter.
Although I would kind of like to know. Anyway,
I don't care all that much, but...
Philip has hasn't written his speech. We keep, like, hearing
you see them, like, preparing with Christmas decorations and the tree and all that stuff. And it was Margaret holding Anne, and it was really cute.
Yes, oh, that was really cute.
I really thought that was
Margaret
cute.
Margaret had, like, some serious freaking hairspray. It was, like, the whole, like, helmet head.
Well, that, but
like,
also,
wow.
she was also, like, keeping track of Charles, and it was really cute seeing her with the kids.
It was.
I really liked that.
It was. So Philip had not written his speech, and you can see some anxiety with Mike, like, you need to write the speech.
He wants inspiration to strike, and he doesn't want to just write what they want him to.
Right.
He wants to write from the heart.
And he does. So he gives his speech.
There's a moment before this where they're trying to figure out where Antarctica is. That was kind of funny.
Oh, you mean Margaret's trying to figure out, because she doesn't know. Which is another sign that she did not have proper education.
Well,
she's like, it's north, isn't it? It's like, no.
But she had French, and that's what matters. Anyway.
And you know, like, manners.
Manners.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, she doesn't know where Antarctica is. And so he gives his speech, and he's like, at this point, we are far from home. And he's been amazed and impressed by all of the places that they've been. And it's made everyone on board, including him, examine the things that he takes for granted.
Mm-hmm.
He discusses solitude, and while we're all here together, each of us stands alone.
And Margaret mentions in the middle of this that he sounds different.
Right. And each of us stands alone, and it's kind of like that far side of the world feeling, just like because again, he describes them being, we're on open water, there's nothing around us, there are no people, and you know, I've had
far from home.
Right, I've had to really think about all of the things that we take for granted, and it's clear that he's homesick.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, even fucking Mike, literally, steps out and he's like, "Say,
well, before that, we see Elizabeth making some changes to her speech,
right?
And she looks at her father's picture before starting her speech, which Philip is listening to on the boat. She gives Philip a message and sends the family's best wishes and says, "A very large united family is waiting for you here, and will always be waiting for you wherever you are."
Right, and it's one of the greatest pleasures of Christmas is hearing Philip's voice.
Yes, and Philip looks at the note that she gave him, and that says, "Always remember you have a family." And he mentions to Mike that he was caught off guard by the sentimentality of her speech and is feeling homesick.
Right, and I think that the note is basically like, we're always here for you. I'm always here for you.
Don't forget that.
And I understand.
You're not alone.
Right, but I understand. She understands in some way that he doesn't always express the loneliness of his upbringing. The loneliness of
his
childhood.
Position.
Right, all of it. And she loves him anyway.
Yeah.
And we're always there for you. And I think that that's one of those things that you see him realizing.
Yeah.
And appreciating. And so he's and you know, the idea of always having family means something very different to him because he's lost everything.
Yeah.
So this is the family that they have created. It's the family that will always be there for him.
Yeah.
So then Mike comes to talk to Philip on deck, and admits that he was homesick.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your best part?
The Christmas speeches and Philip getting flashes of his trauma. I think that finally expanding on his background is a good idea, even if it gets repetitive later on. It's fine now.
Yeah, my best part was basically Philip, too, because this is a Philip episode for sure. It's his self-reflection,
mm-hmm.
and his acknowledgement that he needs family. Because he always seems to be like, I'm the independent guy, I'm the guy who goes off and has adventures, I can do it all alone,
yeah.
You know, I don't need anybody, but it's obvious that he does.
Yeah.
And even he seems to know that.
Yeah.
So that was my best part. What was your worst part?
Mike. And his wife's subplot, only because the fact that she was put in that position in the first place is horrible.
Yeah.
I like the fact that she's getting out of the marriage now, but it's so horrible that this happened to her and the kids.
Yeah. No, the worst part to me is, of course, the infidelity and the suggestion that Philip's part of it.
Yeah, I hate it.
Yeah, that really bothers me. How did you grade this episode?
B+. I think it's good. I hate Mike. I just have to reiterate that as often as I can. But I think that Philip finally feeling like, okay, now I know where my home is and I know who is waiting for me when I get back, and him understanding the gravity of that is very important. And him actually, I didn't point this out, I didn't really harp on it, but in Australia, at some point, he uses the camera.
Yeah.
And so I think that, and I do know going forward he does use the camera a little bit more, but I think that him recognizing a family he's left behind, well, okay, not left behind necessarily, but he knows what's waiting for him, and him understanding that they're always going to be there for him is very important to him as a character.
Yeah.
And him feeling a little bit more stable.
Yeah.
It doesn't wash away all the stuff that has happened before, but
no.
Still.
I gave this episode an A, and I'm sure that's probably a surprise to you, and it's for a bunch of reasons, really. Again, I think structurally it's really well done.
I think I might go up to an A-, but because I think this is better than the last one.
I think the cinematography is great. I mean, yeah. I'm sorry, you know, they've got these Antarctic vistas and just all of these things that are really very beautiful.
They haven't even made it to the Antarctic yet.
Well, in the South Pacific and things like that. And it's really very strikingly beautiful Australia as well. Mm-hmm. I also, you know, the acting I think is great, but I like too that we have a very clear reason why we need to get rid of Mike. Guts to go, but again, I think, you know, the development of that story, like, this could be seen as some, like, arbitrary, oh, Elizabeth's being a bad guy like she was with Peter situation.
But no, Mike is a bad influence.
Right, right. And it's very clearly established. And, you know, I think that that is...
He's the snake in the Garden of Eden.
Yeah, potentially, yes. And so I like that Philip, obviously, I mentioned it already, that he has this self-reflection. And I like your use of the word home. Because home is a big pile of things, right? It's not just a place. It is, you know, the people that you're with and the things that matter to you. And for him to be assessing that and not taking them for granted, I think is very important. And the fact that he acknowledges that, I think, is huge. So I really like this episode a lot.
Yeah.
I think the performances were terrific. So I gave it an A. And I do want to see how this season progresses because, again, there are subtleties and minutiae that I've lost over time.
Yeah.
But I do love these early seasons of The Crown a lot. So I'm looking forward to doing episode 3. How about you?
Yeah. I am.
Cool. So we hope that you tune in and you join us. And
cheers.